Hey everybody, welcome to the second episode of Deep Space Jukebox. I'm Jonathan Steele. I'm hosting the show this week, and I'm joined by
Rob Momery, president and founder of Deep Space Robots.
I'm Andrew Hale. I'm the director of development at DSR.
I'm Aaron Yonke. I'm the director of production at Deep Space Robots.
So this week, we're going to be listening to and talking about the song Star Machine 2000 by Wintergatan, I guess is the best pronunciation I have of their name. They're a Swedish band. It was released in, wow, someone has jacked with my notes in a major way.
Sorry.
It was not released in 1013. It was released in 2013. So we both put it to you. And Wintergatan, you may have heard of them, but you probably have seen the Marble Machine video where that guy kind of cranks up that machine in that white room with all the microphones, and then the marbles drop in and it plays a whole song like just with marbles. Really, really cool thing. Kind of blew up. You've probably seen it. That was Wintergatan. But before that came out, I think Marble Machine came first. And then they also released Star Machine 2000. It wasn't quite as like revolutionary in terms of like this crazy machine, but they did use unconventional instruments to make the song, which is kind of their thing. Not just using normal instruments, but using unconventional methods. So it includes an analog synth. It has a glockenspiel, which is like a little, it's like a little xylophone basically, but it has kind of a magical storybook kind of feel to it, a very high pitched dinging sound. And you kind of heard it in the song probably. A slide projector for part of the percussion. They also have a normal percussionist, but the slide projector kind of drives a lot of the percussion, especially at the beginning. And then a music box, which is cool because at the end of the music video, they have footage of them building and creating this musical box and like creating the car that goes through it as they crank it to make the little, you know, that little high tone music box noise. So very cool. They build their own instruments. They use their own stuff. But I think my favorite instrument, because it sounds so unexpected, is the melodica. I love the way it's that little mouth harp thing. It's like a tiny little piano with an air hose. Kind of sounds like a really smooth harmonica almost. I just love how unexpected and different the direction it takes the song. So the only other real kind of just note about the song is that it features a stop motion video on a slide projector, and the stop motion was created using Legos, which I thought was really cool. I love Legos. So those are kind of some basic facts about the song. I'm sure all you guys had a chance to listen to it at least once, maybe even watch the video. What do y'all think?
I'm kind of curious to know maybe first what it was about this one that made you want to choose it for your song.
A couple of reasons. First, I sort of wanted to see what would happen if I threw a lyric-free song at us and how that would go. Because I think lyrics and songs really facilitate conversation well, and those are great. But I thought it'd be interesting to kind of see how we came at a song without lyrics. So, and I do also listen to a lot of lyric free stuff as I work. So, kind of a natural fit there as well. But also I think this is an interesting one because of the unconventional way that it's made. And I thought that'd be really cool to talk about that.
I first heard of this band back in 2015. At the time I was building, what would have that been? Second generation of the Word Unleashed website. And it was like my first project that was really modern web development. So it was like I was using SAS. I was using build processes for the first time. I was using Git and kind of learning all of these things in isolation because I was the only person on my team. So I was trying to do something creative and trying to do something technical at the same time and listening to this music. And it's got that kind of like really creative touch, but also a little bit like mechanical. It just really fit. And then I started, like, the guy's got a YouTube channel and I started watching it. And at the time he was building the second generation of the Marble Machine that he used in the viral video. And like he'd come into something with a creative vision and get stymied by the technical barriers and then come up with creative ways to overcome those or learn that he just had to level up in technical skill. I felt some sort of soul connection with this guy and this music. It was really impactful for me at that time. So yeah, I love everything about this.
I think there's a level where when you see them put that much care into the very instrument that they're making the music with, mm-hmm. I think you feel the passion of their music come out so much more strongly. Obviously anyone who plays a song is passionate about the song they wrote, but like to watch, especially in this video of Star Machine 2000, to watch all the different people like using these out of the box methods. Mm-hmm. It just has this extra, I don't know, just this extra feeling of kind of sincerity and love for the song that they wrote and the instruments they're using.
Well, the conceit with the stop motion animation, being like they built frames, using Legos and then animated them, you know, frame by frame, rebuilding and unbuilding the Lego creation. And then as part of the video and part of the audio percussion is the slide projector showing each of those slides to create the stop motion animation. So it's this sort of self-referential creative loop. Really, really compelling.
Yes. I couldn't agree more.
It's funny because the way that I approach music is extremely based off of the words in the song. Someone has to point out the instruments and the decisions that went into the way that the music was composed for me to notice it. Mm-hmm. And growing up, I knew classical music existed. I didn't know much more past that about it. And then certainly didn't know that there were whole other genres that were just dedicated to wordless music. I think Jonathan, you were like the first one that introduced me to like artists that didn't have like words in most of their songs. So yeah, I'm still kind of new in trying to figure out how to interact with this type of music, but it's interesting because I find that I have this like tension between wanting to overlay a narrative on top of the music, kind of picturing a scene that would make sense with that music behind it, almost like a movie, or I don't listen to the music and just think about like what the artist who made it must be like based off of the music. But it's like, I think that was my experience listening to it, was the weird position of trying to figure out, like, without trying to apply a narrative to it or to picture the artist, what does it sound like and what does it kind of bring out of me? And I think it's like that lo-fi music that you sent me a while ago, the 4K I think it was called 4K, where it's like, it just felt happy. Felt happy. It felt alive. It felt like there was like every single one of the artists had their personality in it, but it all kind of worked together. I had fun listening to it.
Yeah. I thought it's interesting that your go-to with, wordless music is to start imagining the creators or the narrative, because I find it really difficult to listen to Winter Garden without imagining Martin, the band leader. Because everything about that music sounds like his personality, and like he's so far embedded into that music that, you know, if you watch just one of his YouTube videos or something, you can't help but make the connection once you hear the music. It's really, really it's fun.
He's the guy. Martin is the guy. Martin Mullen. He's the composer of this song, but he's also the guy in the video, the Marble Machine video, like actually running the crank. And just watching that video, you can see him disappear into it completely. Like he forgets there's even cameras on him almost. I mean, he really loves the music he makes. Mm-hmm. I think for me, just talking about the instruments and stuff, I tend to listen to synthesizer music a little bit more, not like techno outright, but like electronica and like kind of synthesized music a lot. And so when I first started listening to this song, when I first discovered it, I loved it, but then you know, and it kind of builds with some synths and some kind of, it's very whimsical, very light. I like kind of positive whimsical songs. And then all of a sudden the melodica just comes in out of nowhere. And it feels, at first it's like, why would they put that in here? It feels almost out of place. But you know how like we kind of have stereotypes with certain instruments now and like where they take us. So like as soon as you hear steel drums, you're like, I'm on the beach. We've just been programmed that way, right? Because of how they're used in music and in movies and everywhere else. And for some reason, when I heard the melodica, I was like, I instantly get transported every time to like a pine forest by the side of a mountain. That I don't know why exactly, but like that's where I feel like it's like electronic music and all this kind of weird eclectic synthesizer stuff. And then it's like we're camping in the mountains every time. I don't know. That's just what it makes me think of. And I love that. It's such a weird mixture, but it really, it comes together so beautifully. It sounds awesome.
So cool.
Yeah, so you guys mentioned like Marble Machine, and I'd never heard of Wintergarten or Wintergatan.
Wintergatan.
So I'd never heard of Wintergatan or Marble Machine or Martin Mullen ever before I had heard the song sent it out, Jonathan. So I came to it really with zero context, which I kind of love. Getting a chance to experience a song without it. And you sent a YouTube video out, so I knew there was a video attached to it, but I intentionally didn't look at the video, but just clicked play and just listened to it. I loved like the found sound feel to it. I didn't know what instruments were creating what, like I kind of loved that. Like I just thought that was kind of a really cool experience of like not really knowing like, oh, this is a, you know, these are slides that are in a slide projector. But I was just thinking like, well, that sounds kind of like, I remember thinking like it kind of sounded like a slide. And then suddenly like with the melodica and even the synth sounds that came in, I mean, like I was immediately 8 years old playing on my Nintendo in my bedroom and having a blast. And in like you were saying, like it just kind of transports you. Like I felt like that's immediately where I got transported because of, you know, the history I have with contextual history I have with so many of the sounds that he uses in that song. And it was just delightful. Like I loved it. I had an absolute blast listening to it. And I even listened because I didn't know. I actually listened to once the song quote unquote finished, I knew it was like an 8 minute long. So I was like, well, the rest of this must just be part of the song. So I listened to the rest of it.
I did the same thing. I did
this, in my mind. This is interesting.
Well, but it was cool. But honestly, like even doing that, like it sort of almost created a the song almost kind of prepared me to listen to natural tones as a musical experience where, you know, like it, you know, taken to itself, just like the flick of a pen doesn't sound like anything. But if you, you know, if you can find, you know, you can find music in it if you're listening for it. And I felt like that was it was kind of a neat, that made it kind of a really neat experience.
Mm-hmm. I love that, man. I love what you said, that phrase, found sound. Mm-hmm. That is super accurate for what this sounds like. I love that a lot. And I feel like there's some songs, they put you in a mood, or maybe you feel like you're hearing a story or something, and you kind of go with the flow of how the song feels. But I feel like this song and other songs like it, they're very, I don't know what the word is. They transport you in like a different way. You feel like you are like swept away to another place. And I'm not sure, maybe it's like listening to a more cinematic orchestral piece or something where you feel like you're on a battlefield or you're soaring over the clouds or whatever. I feel like this just whisks you away to somewhere else. I feel like a way Aaron might put it is like, it demands that your imagination wake up a little bit. Like you can't, I feel like it's hard to listen to this song and not have your imagination go wild with where it's trying to take you. At least that's how it hits me.
I think maybe it has to do with, I think maybe wordless music has an advantage there over music with lyrics, Because when you have music with lyrics, part of you is always trying to tune into the actual textual meaning of the song. And when you remove that, your brain is kind of free to experience the thing in a less linear, like word to word to word fashion, more as like a whole, a general universal whole. And it's easier to kind of get caught up in it.
Yeah, I love that. That's why sometimes I actually enjoy lyrical songs in another language that I can't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because then the voice itself becomes an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's, it was like freezing here yesterday afternoon, and I was out on the stairs to my apartment because I wanted to go outside, but the stairs were iced over, so I couldn't leave my apartment. So I was just standing out on the landing and listening to music. And it was interesting because as I'm thinking about that experience now, I wasn't thinking about the words. And I realized that when I at that time, I actually tried to hear what the guy was singing about. And was kind of surprised because it wasn't what I thought he was singing about. but there was something about like the safety blanket of like, at least they were there, that like it must have let my brain go somewhere. So maybe that sense of like there not being a safety blanket with songs that don't have words, where you're kind of like, it's like when someone gives you a blank piece of paper, or if you suddenly have a lot more autonomy to kind of direct what you do at work or in your personal life, it's like, oh, this is existential freedom and dread at the same time. I'm like, I don't think it has to be that way, but it's kind of a, it's a fun feeling. Like it didn't feel in this case, probably because of the music, it didn't feel unnerving.
Yeah. Well, they say that, 80%, I think, of human communication is not your words, but everything else, your expression and your body language and your tone and all that stuff. And I feel like that's what lyricless music can do, where it lets you get into the emotions in the head of the artist more, because he can't express what he's trying to tell you with his words. He's actually trying to tell you something with music. And I think I feel like you get so much closer into like where he's trying to go and what he's trying to feel and express.
It's like the difference between something like, The Social Network by Aaron Sorkin. And that's like a lot of words. Like words per minute, like that's a lot of words in a movie compared to something like 2001 Space Odyssey, which is like, it's all visual. Mm-hmm. And 2001 makes you feel something different than Social Network. Like Social Network is a good movie, well acted, expertly written, well directed, but it doesn't make you feel the same way that 2001 does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't agree more. So I have a question for y'all. I'm just curious because I know what it is in my head, but I want to hear what each of you think. If this song was a season, what season is it?
I'd say spring.
Yeah.
It feels like a mid spring. For me, it felt like a mid spring.
Okay.
Know?
I can see that.
That's where I put it.
Yeah, I'd say spring heading to summer.
You know,
kind of optimistic. We're heading up. It's exciting. We're doing stuff. That's where I'd put it.
Okay.
Yep.
I actually think the same thing. I was about to say spring.
Oh, wow. Seems like it's objectively true.
It sounds like the flower petals like opening up the whole song, like little pops of color.
That's so fascinating. Because I'm a spring summer kind of guy. I love warmer weather much more than cold weather, but this song instantly hit me and kind of stayed at like a fall going into winter, but in a very, not because it's like cold and we're huddled up, but like we're going out into the cold to embrace it and to have some fun. And like, it feels crisp and cool but still inviting to me. Like, and the thing is, again, I don't like cold weather much. I'm not having a great time right now in Texas with everything being in the 20s all the time. Like, but yet, like, I feel like I want to go to Canada and go sledding or something in this song. I don't know. It's crazy, but that's interesting. I see the spring angle. It's so alive and like colorful, but I don't know. I was just curious what y'all would
say. I wonder if some of that's like the cultural frequency that a glockenspiel is used to depict, like snow drifting down.
Yes. Well, that, and then again with the melodica, like I said, I always see like mountains and pines. And so that just takes me to fall and winter. I can't like unhook that connection. So that's probably what it is for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would still see snow on the ground potentially in my version of spring. So, you know,
true. There you go. There you go. Winter coming into spring.
Is it also because the name of the band is Winter Gatan?
Yeah, probably. Settlers of Winter Gatan.
So, Aaron, getting back to what you had said earlier, like you listened to it, you weren't quite sure how to feel about it, but it made you feel happy. I actually ended up buying this LP a couple of years ago, and it came in the mail with like the LP and then like a personal letter written, like Martin had written, and a couple of CDs from like bands that he had been in before this. And like this little print, like it's kind of like a greeting card kind of, but one of his friends was into printmaking and made like this composition. It's amazing. I don't know if you guys can see this, but like,
whoa,
like it's this little hand done print.
Oh my God. That looks just like a card from GCC Portfolio.
But it's like, it's got a little moose down there from Sweden.
That's crazy.
It's so much fun. So like everything, I don't know, every interaction I've ever had, either personal or public, has kind of left me feeling the warm fuzzies. Mm. It's pretty great.
They seem to be a really cool band. And incidentally, I know you said that back in years and years ago when you were solving that problem, they were working on the second version of Marble Machine, which they're calling Marble Machine X. That is still being built.
Yeah.
I think it's going on close to a decade, maybe like 7 or 8 years.
It's been a minute.
And it's way more complex. And every now and then, if you follow them on YouTube, they are live streaming like test runs where they're testing. They'll add more components or more like instruments to it and then run the marbles through and see how it goes. And then they'll keep building and like he'll do it live on stream. And it's pretty cool. Like they're really dedicating a lot of time to the second version.
What I find interesting is like how, you know, I'd love to hear Martin explain how he would consider the song done. Like at what point would he say like it has everything that it needs? It's been, you know, it's added, you know, I built this thing for it. We now have all of these pieces in place and now we did it. It's done and it's there, you know, because I wonder if he would even ever say that, because when I saw the live version and you had like, they switched out the slide deck with that little typewriter and it was like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool. Like subtle change, but like, gave it some really cool, just a cool different vibe. I would just, I don't know. And I'd love to hear that from you guys. Like at what point can you close the chapter on a creative work and say it's over?
Yeah, that's kind of tough because at some point it's like, don't add paint to a masterpiece. But at the other end of the spectrum is like, if you're a creative person, you can always come up with something to do to make it better.
I think, Aaron, I think you told me one time a long time ago that creative work is never finished. It's just abandoned. Yeah. Is that you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that's the case. Like you just have to stop at some point and it's done.
I even think like what I'm working on right now with trying to look at the interactions and the processes and the people at Deep Space as something that can be diagrammed, but also not at the same time, and understanding where something can be understood and mapped out in a scientific way, but where there's room for ambiguity and where it's important to maintain ambiguity. I think that to me has felt oddly like a creative process where I have like I have notes and notes of paper of like abandoned iterations of like trying to depict how the deep space system operates and all the components, and realizing like halfway through, oh, this one component is like not quite right. So everything that interconnects with it and depends on it is like also kind of flawed. And so then going and re-updating that component to be like, actually, this is more accurate to what we're like. And comparing that to like with a GCC concept of finding a vector and then building an entire scene around this, my like favorite vector, and then finding one that's like 2% better, but a completely different art style, and being like, well, I could just go and grab, like, I could abandon what I have now and go grab that one. Or I could realize that like at a certain point, someone else needs to experience this, or with like the system,
yeah,
some decisions need to be made off of what information I'm gathering from the systems that I'm trying to diagram.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's tenuous. It has a lot of tension in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think constraints are powerful too, because actually constraints can often breed greater creativity. Because they focus you down a path, and often that's the thing we need the most, is to be focused down a path. There's that story about when they were first creating Mario, like designing his character. He initially did not have a mustache, but because the pixel count was so low, they couldn't put a mouth on him in any way that looked natural. It just looked weird because each pixel was so large. So they were like, what if we just throw a mustache on there and then we don't have to draw a mouth? And that's why he has a mustache to this day, because they had a creative constraint, and it forced them down a path. And now that's like the most iconic part of Mario, is his mustache, one of the most iconic parts. Mm-hmm. So it's just fascinating.
I think they create that self-imposed. I mean, like I see that in that song too, where just their way that they are, like just the architecture surrounding that piece is fascinating. You know, what sounds they used, where they pulled it from. Like there's such a creativity in just designing the architecture surrounding, you know, to like designing the constraints, you know, and then forcing some off and throwing others on. Like I feel like we see the result of an artist's creative process in the final work. And it did kind of make me love Martin Mullen and like that whole group so much more, to like see, just to see the output and knowing like, and then and the understanding like what all must have gone into the input to get to that spot was just so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like how many random things around the house did he end up not using? You know, like I can't even imagine.
If you check out his Bandcamp, there's like six different versions of like alternate versions of songs that didn't actually get published. But he puts them up on his Bandcamp. So if you wanted to like dig through the archaeology behind it, it's there for the world to see.
That's
one of the, one of the really interesting constraints that I think he stuck to, at least in the music video here, was like they're a 4-person band. And so that's a constraint. They wanted to be able to play this live. And so they didn't, you know, if you're doing electronic music, there's a tendency to like have 128 track songs, cause you can. Mm-hmm. But one of the constraints is they wanted to play this live. And so everyone's doing a bunch of stuff. Like the drummer is drumming, and he's also got a drum pad and a trap set, and everyone else is playing multiple instruments. Like the bassist has the melodica, and you know, there's the hammers and the modulin, and then the synth player is playing like 3 different synths and stuff. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Amazing that they could do that in a live version. Amazing.
Oh, I would love to see that live, man. Can you imagine? So awesome.
Yeah.
Well, great thoughts, y'all. Awesome discussion. I'm so glad we got to talk this out. I love hearing everybody's thoughts on this. Final rating from what we'll keep it this week. We're going to keep it really simple. No wobbles, no anything. We're going to go 1 to 10. 1 is worst, 10 is best. How would you rate this song, and kind of a final thought or summary of how it hit you or what it meant to you?
I would say a 6.5.
Okay.
I think it's I always love hearing y'all's thoughts because you're picking up on way more in it than I did. And out of like your impressions and kind of the questions and narratives that come out of it, I feel like my rating always goes up by the end of the end of the conversation.
It was a 3, but now it's a 6.5.
No. I think I probably would have put it at like a 5.5. But you're right. Like there's so much of his personality in it, the intricacy, complexity. And also just like, I'm kind of grateful that music exists that doesn't have words because it creates a lot of tension and a lot of opportunities for different parts of your mind to kind of come online. And I like the joy that each person playing had in the video. And I also like the craftsy feel of it, that it kind of, that isn't something that gets lost through production. You can still feel that in the final product, and that's hard to do. So I think 6.5.
Okay.
I would go probably 8 or 8.5. I really like this song. I like the marriage of creativity and kind of the technical, like Aaron mentioned, like the craft work, and building their own instruments and the found sound. Really like it.
I think when you, if I'm adding up the nostalgia it brought, the quality of the work, and the beauty of the whole experience, I gotta give it like probably 8.25, I would say. That's where I would land. So okay. I'm right there with you, Andrew.
I think I'm also right about an 8.5. I thought about a 9, but I think I just want to score everything really high. I was like, oh, this is great. I love this song. I'm going to give it a 10, you know?
That's okay. It just means,
but
you really
I
do, like
no, I know. And it's not like it means that all their songs have to be a different number or anything, but
some can go to 11.
And some will. I think it's solid 8.5. I think it's just, I just love how it transports you away to me. I just, it is such a positive, whimsical song. And it's so meticulously crafted. And I really enjoy it a lot. All right, guys. Thanks so much, everyone. Awesome episode. And I'm looking forward to number 3 next time.
Oh, yeah. Woo!
Thanks for listening to Deep Space Jukebox.
See you guys.
Bye.